Bathrobe spears broadside, civil rights for the poor in Santa Cruz, California, and the nation. This is a call-in talk show that goes from 10 to 12. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And our call-in number here, in case you want to join in the fun, is 427-3772. I'm your host, Bathrobe spear Robert Norse, with special guests, Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins. We're hoping to find Brimstone Barbara Riverwoman, too, although she may not be able to make it. Plus, a few drop-in guests are expected. And, of course, you may drop in, which, of course, would be the most interesting and unexpected thing. The phone lines are where you can drop in through. And, again, the number is 427-3772.
Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello, Mr. Robert Norse. This is Dean.
Hi, Dean.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine, but we're having trouble reading you on the phone. There we go. It's a little bit of a... I'm holding the phone plug in here as we talk.
How
are you doing, Dean? I'm afraid this phone plug is... Well, go ahead. I'm hoping we can hear you. Hang on. Let me see. Say something.
Well, I realize that there's a lot of homeless...
We can hear you. We can hear you. Go ahead.
I realize that there's a lot of homeless people in our culture, but one thing that we need to take into account, just as significant, is all the homeless creatures in our culture, basically because our culture destroys those homeless creatures. And when we're working to fight homelessness, we aren't just working to fight homelessness for people, but we're working to fight homelessness for all species, all creatures. We're continually extirpated from their habitat and their homes and put into a place where their life is threatened because we can make money that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the root cause. So I just like to say that, and I was wondering, is the CD player working there?
You know, I don't know because I don't use the CD player.
Oh, I heard a rumor that it was.
It's sitting here, I can tell you that. I don't know if it's actually working or
okay.
What it's doing.
Well, I'll be in at 12 o'clock to talk about homeless critters. And
well, you know, that's really a whole new subject. Maybe at some point you can really bring us up to speed. I have no real sense of what other species or even regard as home. I guess you can figure that cages and laboratories are not home for other species. But
basically, when you build a house somewhere or when you cut down a forest or when major developers want to make money... what that money equates to is the destruction of habitat, and it's kind of what our Western civilization has been built upon, is the destruction of other species for the benefit of a small number of people amongst our species at the cost of all the rest of the people in our species.
And we're not doing too well with our own species, I might add. And of course, that's often the theme of our show, looking about the, you know, what's happening to people here in Santa Cruz who are, you know, being hassled from here to there because they're sleeping or because they fit the stereotype of what the merchants think should not be downtown.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
They're out of place. There's been no place set up for them, so they stand out and people want to move them along. Similar to when you cut a forest down, all the creatures that used to live into that forest have to find a new home somewhere, and so they go into other people's areas and they're out of place and they become persecuted. So, you know, there's definitely a relationship with that. I mean, I remember the old downtown mall, not the one that was right before the earthquake, but maybe 10 years prior. There were some really neat garden spaces. There were some neat lawn spaces. And the people who were a little bit more pure of spirit, were more color, more colorful clothing, had dreadlocks, and lived a healthier lifestyle, seemed to blend in with the environment. Of course, now we have a strip mall. And which is basically a large concrete strip with fancy rich people stores. And the people that used to be part of the downtown habitat, so to speak, now have been pretty much infringed upon by the people who think they own that habitat.
Well, it's true, you know, and I think that I'm constantly haranguing against the anti-homeless laws and actually, the very redesigning of the mall, which happened under the so-called Vision Santa Cruz project about 5 years ago after the earthquake, I protested that there was no homeless representation, at which point Mayor Rotkin, I remember he was then not even a council member. He had been a council member, and he was now on the Vision Santa Cruz, stated that putting a homeless person on the downtown commission would be like putting a pickpocket on the crime commission, something to that effect.
Yeah.
I remember that statement, and it was an amusing statement at the time, and it really kind of showed what they were doing. They were redesigning the mall to, you know, fit in with Police Chief Bassett's plan, really, which was essentially to log the mall, to, you know, to deforest it, to remove all the shrubbery, to straighten it so it no longer had the meandering quality.
Yeah.
It was all, and part of it was done, and to remove all the planters, so you couldn't really sit down anywhere except at these specified benches.
Yeah, which, and even before, you know, before everything fell down in 89, I remember you were part of the battle to return the benches. They basically pulled up a lot of the benches when some of the downtown merchants started complaining before the earthquake.
That's right.
And, yeah,
including in front of Neil Coonerty's bookshop Santa Cruz, the old bookshop Santa Cruz.
Exactly.
Although, actually, I may be wrong about that. It may have been the Cup of Joy next to it, that there was a cafe next door to it. But it was, benches were pulled from that area.
Yeah, the mall that once was is just kind of a blur to me now. But I've gone through the Downtown Recovery Management Plan and read that. And it's not specifically targeting trying to get rid of homeless people, so much as it's specifically targeting the smooth and rapid flow of consumers through the area. So people can see all the way down the street, they can see their favorite stores, they can run in, get their stuff, run out, spend money.
Throw the money in as you walk by, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And if anybody disrupts that system, i.e. sitting down or standing in one place for longer than 30 seconds, they're no longer a part of the economic beauty or economic disgust of our
well, you know, I wish
to be eradicated.
And that would make more sense. Even though I don't like that model, that has a certain rational appeal. But I think I mentioned this in my last show. I went to the Downtown Commission, which is sort of a special board that consists of merchants who kind of look into what would be construed as sort of technical parking problems and specific tiny projects that happen downtown. And I heard them debate these two issues, which I guess I mentioned on the air, the change-making machines that they're planning to put in, and also the fencing of the Ford's parking lot, which I see from the paper today has been purchased by Barry Swanson and I guess, is it the Seaside Corporation has also purchased it as a joint owner? I'm not sure. I've got to check the headlines. But the point is that they have moved from this rational rhetoric you're talking about, which is the flow of traffic, to actually saying, we don't want these people around here. We don't want them there. We don't want these bums, these hippies, these transients, these ne'er-do-wells. The word bum was used a couple of times by not only one witness, Randall Kane, who's the head of the Catalyst, but also by members on the board. And the general point was that they don't need to fence off the parking lot because it's a hazard. They don't need to fence off the parking lot because it's losing the money or it's an inconvenience. They're fencing it off because they think it's going to make the property more desirable by eliminating a class of people from that area.
Yeah, and exactly. Basically the stand out so much more with the new mall design, and it wasn't their intent specifically to remove those people, but as soon as the mall was rebuilt and they saw what it looked like, these people stood out like a sore thumb because it wasn't, there was no voice, there was no
rationale for creating space for them. You know, I'd like to see some voices for an alternate mall. I know that when Linda LeMaster, or I call her Lighthouse Linda, who's on housing now and who's been a welfare parent support group person for a long time, I don't think she's with them now at the moment, but she's been an activist for poor people. She's a member of CAB, the Community Action Board, and she ran for city council in 1992. She has been concerned for a long time with positive plans on the mall to really change the whole complexion of the mall so we could actually have the kind of city, the kind of downtown that we want, and in essence was stolen from us. You know?
Exactly, and anybody who brings up an idea such as that gets berated and beaten upon. I know that.
Well, bring up some ideas. I won't berate you and I won't beat you. Tell me some ideas you might have for a downtown mall. What do we need downtown on the mall that we could start pressing for? I know people have talked about, you know, making it a pedestrian mall for bikes only.
Okay. Well, I focus primarily on the environmental side of it, and the Mission Hill area is where the area of Santa Cruz was first settled. The reason they settled there is because there's an overwhelming amount of underground streams that feed into the area. Of course, with our modern advancement in our great high minds of our culture, they have taken all those underground springs and dumped them into the sewer. So they flow underground out to the ocean. These underground springs could be brought back, could be run through the Mission Hill area where the old mission is, and all that land next door to the clock tower could be converted into a beautiful park. And then these underground streams could be brought above ground and have them flow in a little corridor right down the mall.
That sounds like a great idea.
With great aquatic habitats, and it could be all, you know, everybody will bring up liability issues about small children drowning and stuff, but, you know, you could design something that would be very appropriate. The bottom line is every single merchant down there doesn't want the automobile taken away from the traffic.
Now, do you speak by having spoken to the merchants, or are you just sort of assuming this?
Oh, I basically, they wanted the kind of common sense idea was to make this an open mall.
Right, but
have you actually
talked to merchants like recently in the last few months? Said, look, I've got this idea for this, you know, aquatic change in the mall. What would you think of it in concept anyway?
Well, I've read the downtown management plan, and I've talked to enough merchants, and I have a good enough feel for what their perspective is. And the most precious object to them is the automobile, because people can pull right up to their stores, even though most of the time they can't.
Well, there's an even more precious object, because apparently they're going to try to fence in the Ford parking lot. That will be voted on February 13th at the city council meeting. So even though this would provide, you know, feeding grounds and space for vehicles, and actually that was one reason why Randall Kane, owner of the Catalyst, opposed this idea of fencing in the Ford's parking lot. We're talking about fencing it in completely so it cannot be used as a parking lot.
Exactly, and that's where the downtown commission is going to lose, because the only thing more precious to the community of getting rid of homeless people, getting rid of the riffraff, the only thing more precious than that is parking space.
Well, you know, I'm wondering if they're going to lose. I know they lost on the change-making machine at Cathcart and Pacific, but they are also putting on the agenda for February 13th, second Tuesday, I guess it's Tuesday after next, a proposal to set up two more change-making machines, one of them at Soquel and Pacific, one of them at Maple and Pacific, which sounds innocuous, except that what it means is that their anti-homeless downtown sit 50 feet from a spare changing machine, go to jail law comes into effect. And therefore, and they've admitted this. They haven't just said, you know, oh, we want these change machines because people need change. They said, yeah, let's locate it right in the middle of this lot so we can clear everybody out of the area who's sitting down.
Exactly.
I mean, right in the middle of the fenced-in lot at Soquel and Pacific.
Yeah. Well, actually, I got to get going.
Listen, thanks for the conversation.
Sure, I'm going to
bring us some new ideas about the downtown mall.
Well, yeah, well, that's what I'd like to say. I'm going to be on the air at 12 o'clock, and, you know, the fundamental problem to all this is we've been totally removed from our natural surroundings, and I feel that the people they're harassing and trying to get kicked out are the people much more in touch with natural surroundings, homeless people who, you know, live in a much more pleasant place if they spend some time out in the woods. Obviously, it's not pleasant because they're totally persecuted about it. But the bottom line is we need to get in touch with our natural surroundings, the nature that we're a part of, and not this mechanized machine of economic destruction that kills and rips the hearts out of it.
Before you go, by the way, Dean, have you been readmitted to the famous hip Java House Cafe yet?
Absolutely not, and I've been persecuted by quite a great deal of elitist activists who think that Java House is just too cool of a place for anybody to be extirpated from.
Have you sought to get back in since we last spoke about this issue on the air?
No, I haven't. I usually reserve that opportunity once a year on my birthday in June. I go in just to get kind of kicked out, to kind of have that good, loving feeling that birthdays are all about.
If you do it beforehand, let us know, because, again, the word has sort of gotten to me that allegedly they're prepared to, quote, talk to people who have been kicked out and let them in again. And I'd like to get any reports from any of our listeners, including you, as to whether that is actually sincerely being done or whether that's simply kind of, you know, blather in the wind.
Well, I'll see if the wind blows me in there.
All righty.
Take care.
Thanks, Dean. And we'll hope the folks tune into your show at noon.
Yes, and hope the folks allow for you to be off finishing your show at noon rather than noon 15.
I see.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, What kind of a comment is that, I must say? yes, well, I often do like to go over time because I feel like I've got so much I want to blather about. And is that the phone ringing again, for heaven's sakes? Yes, it is.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Robert, hi. Bob LaMonica here.
Hi, Bob.
Yeah, talking about Lester and Moe, I thought it might be a nice time to bring up what Bill Lebon and Mark Hoffmeister and myself had proposed. In fact, we're going to be advocating for an advisory proposition on the November ballot for a pedestrian mall downtown Santa Cruz. We tried to put together an initiative and found out that you can't because of the way the law is structured. The way the law is structured is the city administers every road and the state legislates, hence you can't use the initiative process. We can't even do an advisory proposition out from the bottom from the people, but we are going to try to lobby the city council, and there is some support, okay, for a pedestrian mall. And we have a good plan. Basically, it would be 3 blocks out of 5 from Cathcart to Water that would be closed off. And the model is Boulder, Colorado. Boulder, Colorado did this back in the 70s by city council resolution. So it is possible. A lot of European cities are doing it. They're closing off their downtown certain streets to car traffic to make it more humane and more pedestrian-oriented. So there is a plan in the works, and hopefully there will be an advisory proposition on the November 96 ballot, which will be toothless. It'll just say shall. But nonetheless, if there's enough support in the community for this, and I believe that there is, I believe this is the time to do this kind of activity, the 90s. It's time to get bold, and it's time to do things other than what organizations like the Downtown Business Association think.
Or even scam.
You bet. Okay. So the plan, the plan is 3 blocks from Cathcart to the top of the mall, Water, that would be blocked off, Lincoln to Cathcart and Church to Walnut and Water to Locust. That way there would be cross traffic, because otherwise it would be next to impossible to accomplish it. Okay. So there's a plan that's a possibility. It's a well worked plan. And as I said, back in December, we put together the paperwork to try an initiative. And I think if we would have been able to qualify, right, as an initiative, it would have taken off like a rocket. We would have needed about 6,000 signatures to get it on the ballot.
You might try some informal organizing downtown at a table to kind of start the bandwagon rolling. We're considering doing that around the curfew issue, although the curfew, as you know, does not affect the city but is affecting the county. I'm going to be reporting on that issue later on the show. I went to the Children's Commission last night. I got a question for you, Bob, that you may not know the answer to, but perhaps you could investigate it. And that's the question of how are homeless and transients treated in Boulder, Colorado, on their new or their old pedestrian mall?
Well, I can't answer that, but part of the process over the next coming months is going to be to do more research into the Boulder model. Okay, the deadline is, I think it's June 11th. The city council has to act by June 11th to put an advisory proposition on the November ballot. We can stretch that out, but in between then and now, what's going to happen is that we're going to formally propose to the city council that they put an advisory proposition on the ballot for a pedestrian mall downtown Santa Cruz. But in terms of the specifics with Boulder, they did 4 blocks, and we're asking for 3. They did it in the 70s. They did it was well designed and well done to the point where they'll never go back. Okay. And I think it's the way that the way of the future. Okay, the way of the future is to get people out of their cars and to get people to interact.
Yeah, I agree completely.
And to humanize the community.
Yeah, we need more public spaces downtown, and the promised large sidewalks are going to be evaporating as these new buildings go in, and as we find the increased enforcement of the anti-homeless laws. For example, today there was a very disquieting decision in the paper announced in today's Chronicle about the. The Ninth Circuit Court. Do I have the right court? It's a federal court, and it's ruled that its previous Blair decision, which had allowed people to panhandle, which had ruled the panhandling laws unconstitutional, has now been suspended. So cops and prosecutors are free to go after people for spare changing under state law again, which is really an unfortunate thing. But let me move this along, and I suggest to our callers that. If they're interested in supporting Bob LaMonica and the plan of a number of people.
I can give you a number to call because really, Bill Lebon, it's really his...
Okay, give us Bill's number then.
423, excuse me, 426-2453.
426-2453.
This thing is just in the burgeoning stage.
Okay.
What we figure out is the way to do this is by advisory proposition
right.
on the November ballot.
You can also call, of course, the City Council and advise them that you support this proposal, and that's at 429-3550.
Okay, one last thing I want to say. There are many more citizens in the community than there are people on the Downtown Business Association, and they do not have the last call.
I would hope so.
All right.
Thanks, Bob.
Take care. Bye.
Well, I certainly hope they don't have the last call myself, although I'm afraid that frequently they have had the last call, with some exceptions. And regarding what I was saying in terms of this plan to fence off the Ford's parking lot, which is coming up on the February 13th City Council meeting on Tuesday, as well as to put in change-making machines that will make it illegal to sit down within 50 feet at Soquel and Pacific and then again at Maple and Pacific, these are plans that seem to be in line with original comments made by Mayor Mike Rotkin when he got into office about dealing with the youth problem downtown and the hanger-outer problem, or however he phrased it. And I really am a little apprehensive that this is what's going to be happening. Rotkin and others did block the plan to put in a change-making machine at Cathcart and Pacific, which would have been right next to where Feed the People feeds, what is it, four times a week or five times a week, something like that, and Food Not Bombs serves on Wednesday, would have resulted in, as Rotkin aptly put it, instant demonstration. But I think that the merchants may have their way this time unless we do something, and I encourage you all to call 429-3550 to tell them do not accede to this plan of fencing in the Ford's parking lot. It's an attack on a class of people. It removes parking space that's free at the moment. It's not required, and really it gives the city a black eye and sets it in the wrong direction. The area has already been purchased by Swenson and the Seaside Company, and it's headed for development, and we don't need to clear all the poor people out to please them and any potential department stores that might move into town. That's certainly my view on that. Well, maybe we should do our quick bit here, or maybe not so quick, on the question of, well, the eternal question of Community House. Community House, as most of you know, is the 10-trailer, 45-person, $200 to $600 a month project that is being slated for placement construction out at what was the open-air shelter, the Coral Street open-air shelter, which was housing and tents and under lean-to shelters, 150 to 250 people throughout the fall. I have in the studio with me Dragon Star Dan Hopkins, who was one of the the Coral Street campers with Save Our Shelters. He was also one of the River Street refugees, one of the folks that was bussed out of town at, I guess, city expense when Mike Rotkin was trying to show what a sweet guy he was, and also coincidentally getting rid of the center of any protest around Christmas time after the Citizens Committee for the Homeless violated its promise to keep that campground open at least until its community house permits were granted. Now, as of the 26th of this month, the permits were granted by the Zoning Board, and only one person spoke against them, me, and, of course, there weren't too many people speaking in favor of them, and it kind of went ahead like the done deal that many of us thought it was. But there seems to be some opposition still. I mean, I personally am... I'm opposed to what is going on out there in terms of the fact that there is no emergency shelter at the present time outdoors, that the Armory is going to open on March 15th, I should say closed. The Armory doors will open, the people will be scooted out, those who are in there. And that population will be added to the hundreds and hundreds of homeless people who are already without shelter in Santa Cruz, and they won't have the campground that they've had for the last 2 years. There are some who take a more... perhaps it's long-reaching, perhaps it's a far-seeing view that the city will open up a better campground, either in the Poganip, De La Vega Park, on some piece of property in Harvey West, the Benchlands. I mean, there are certainly many places where the city could act to open up a campground, one of the most vital needs and has been one of the most concerted demands of homeless people for the last decade. People before I showed up here were talking about and asking for and sitting in for and petitioning the Board of Supervisors and doing hunger fasts for a campground, a low-income campground. And one of the reasons they were was because Santa Cruz has one of the most onerous anti-homeless laws in the state, the anti-homeless camping ban, the sleeping ban. And people have been telling me, well, you know, all these other cities have their camping bans. That's true. There are many camping bans, but there are very few sleeping bans. For instance, in Santa Barbara, the word sleeping was removed from the ban. Camping, if you drag around a tent and you set up a tent, that's considered illegal. Now, I mean, I think there's, I think people should have a place to put up a tent, frankly, and that's what this campground struggle is about. But in Santa Cruz, you can't fall asleep. You fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night outdoors anywhere or in your vehicle anywhere except in a church parking lot. If you're in the ISSP program and are lucky enough not to have been expelled from that program, then you are illegal and you're subject to a $162 fine. And on the second offense, it can be charged as a misdemeanor. Although, candidly, it never has been. Actually, it's been charged, but charges have never been taken to court. They probably know that they don't want to take the sleeping criminal case to the jury trial. That wouldn't play too well, I don't think. But it's there to intimidate you, to frighten you, to make sure you get moving, you get out of town, you keep hidden, you keep out of sight. And it's a constant, I think, shame and a disgrace to those of us who feel that a basic human right is the right to sleep. And this is something I brought up frequently. And it's one of the reasons that I spoke against the community house permits. I gave a number of reasons. One of them was that the Citizens Committee for the Homeless is, the central reason was that they're locating on property that has served as emergency shelter 10 trailers for 45 people. And they're, in essence, cutting far back the amount of available space for people to sleep. It's been pointed out to me repeatedly that this is private property and they can do whatever the hell they want. Certainly, technically that is true, although there is the proviso in their deed that they purchased and fundraised on behalf of the homeless. They called themselves the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and they raised money to buy the property when it was actually serving as a campground, an illegal campground, in 1990-91. And then they ousted people from the campground in 91, claiming they were going to build community house, the same claim they made this year. And they actually had $20,000 given to them for architectural plans in that year, just as last year they had $25,000 given to them by the city council through their CDBG funds. This time the money is slated to move the trailers down from Stanford that are donated to this million-dollar, 45-person project. And the issue is, you know, it's been described by some city council members as homeless service people fighting over the scraps, and that's not it at all, really. I'm concerned that the Citizens Committee for the Homeless has a really quite a monopoly on the homeless shelter scene in the city. They run the shelter program. They run the ISSP program. If you want shelter at night, you go to the ISSP. That's really it. I mean, it's true, you can maybe get into a New Life Center program. Maybe if your tie-dye is well hidden, you can get into Carota's. I'm not even sure if Carota's shelter is open at this time. I know the soup kitchen is. Dan, do you know if the shelter is open, Carota's shelter?
I have no idea.
He's not sure either. But, you know, the ISSP, which is run by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, is the organization that handles their sleeping quarters and facilities, spots on church floors for homeless people in Santa Cruz County. So I think they have a special responsibility not to eliminate camping spaces if they can. And I think they know that. And the problem is, whenever this issue is raised in their meetings throughout the fall, they would ignore it. They wouldn't discuss it. They would simply proceed with what they were doing. When campers raised this issue at the campground, and actually they raised two issues. They raised the issue of the community house project coming up this spring and the right to sleep throughout the winter as long as the weather allowed that campground to continue. And they finally secured a deal from CCH that they would be able to stay. On November 29th, Daryl Darling and Paul Marceau promised SOS, Save Our Shelter, in a recorded verbal contract that they could stay over the winter. Actually, they could stay, and the specific was, until 10 days after community house permits were granted. or January 1st if the permits were granted for some weird reason in December, which they weren't. And that would put it into February. About now is when that campground should be closing down. And I'm sure that, I'm not sure, but I think the campers might have been willing. There wouldn't have been any ruckus, there wouldn't have been any criticism. Maybe there still would have been some criticism, let's be fair. Because they indeed are still pressing right on with a trailer project which will displace campers. And they have, and they've even refused to allow other people to run this camping area, though they claim that they can't run it because it's unprofitable and exhausting and they have problems with it. But other people are not even going to be allowed to run it. They haven't considered moving to another property with their trailers when that was proposed with the open-air shelter. I mean, I've seen an intransigent, hostile attitude, a determination, almost like a smug attitude. That really is how I have to describe what I, when I see Daryl Darling talking to the campers, when I see him talking to the city council, and I say this, it's not fair to say I say it without hostility, because I do feel some hostility toward Daryl. I see a smug attitude there. I see, and why not be smug? I mean, after all, you know, he's got the council in his pocket. I mean, that's what it looks like to me. They appropriated this money, and they, in order to deal with any concerns, they have kind of wired it into a small subcommittee. So $28,000 of CDBG grant money is going to the community house directly for trailers, and then the rest of the $47,000 odd bucks that they want, they will dole out through the subcommittee, which I cannot get a meeting time on. I've been calling the city council, trying to find out when this subcommittee is meeting, and I can't for the life of me find it out. So anyway, I opposed the community house permits. I favor transitional housing. I think Paige Smith and Pauly's idea of community house is a good idea, but I've opposed it fundamentally because of the fact that they are displacing much larger numbers of homeless people than they are helping. And they are the group that has been fundraising all over the county for the last decade for the homeless. And so I regard it as a bad move. There are other reasons, too. In their process, they've been undemocratic. They tried to have me arrested at the last meeting. They tried to have a homeless man, Dan Hopkins, he's in the studio, arrested for tape recording what was supposed to be a public proceeding, which they admitted in a letter was a public proceeding, but they felt that they had the right to exclude me from anyway. They refused to let people speak at the prior meeting, me specifically. They refused to deal with the issues, and they refused a process that allows homeless people significant input. There are no homeless people on their board of directors other than Ray McMahon, who's in jail in Virginia. May he get out soon. They got some guy on a rehab program that they kind of, you know, put in there as their homeless person, but he's not homeless. You know, it's not a good situation. And they may say they support open-air shelter, and I'm sure they do, but I think the proof is in the pudding. You know, and they may talk the talk, but do they walk the walk? That's the question. And the answer has to be, at least so far, no. And there are those who say, and I'm going to read you a letter from one who very eloquently kind of gives what I regard as something of a different position, though she does agree with me on some of these points. Those who say that the citizens coming for the homeless should not be attacked, the citizens coming for the homeless should be worked with, that the citizens coming for the homeless shares the goals of the homeless in seeking a campground, that they simply have had this community house project, you know, on hold and in the pipeline for a long time, and that they've had some problems running their campground, but you know that's just how it was, and it is fruitless for homeless activists to fight among themselves. I'm going to read this argument very specifically from a letter that was given to me by Barbara Riverwoman, who is one of the chief spokespersons for Save Our Shelters. Actually, it's not really Save Our Shelters anymore. It's, what's it called? River Street Refugees. We actually have a River Street Refugee here, although I might call him a renegade River Street Refugee. That's Dan Hopkins. Maybe it's best for me to introduce Dan. He's been kind of lurking in the next room. Dan, you can come in here if you want. I mean, there are two mics. Let's see if we can get you on the air here.
Morning.
Good morning. By the way, if anyone wants to join in on this brouhaha or this monologue and kind of break the snoozy tone, you can give a call to 427-3772. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And our show is going to cut off abruptly at noon, and so you better call before then if you want to talk. Before I began this long harangue, Dan, which is sort of going here, there, and everywhere, and I don't want to spend all my time talking about the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. All right, who's arrived? Somebody else?
Oh, yeah, Phil.
Oh, well, Phil Free has arrived, too, a musician about them all. Dan, you came to me yesterday with a rather surprising statement and a set of intentions. What you want to tell me what that's all about? What are you doing here? What's happening?
Well, yesterday when I talked to you, you know, I had already said in my mind months ago when all this ordeal happened with us at the homeless shelter over there, that when I presented my ideas as to why community house was not feasible because of the cement factory next door, rebar place, and traffic on the other side, and not easy access to that lot too. There's a health hazard there possibly in the earth of toxins being in the earth from past occupants there, oil and things like that. There's dust coming from the cement factory, and the wind blows it right over to that property. And from what the newspapers say, that it can cause cancer and many other illnesses and birth defects in pregnant women. So what I talked to Robert about yesterday was that I'm going to appeal the community house, and it costs $50 to do that. And I must say I'm having a hard time getting the $50 together. But I'm going to have a table on the Pacific Avenue tomorrow, and hopefully before 10 o'clock in the morning. And I'm going to have a table that anyone wants to help me in getting the $50. I have a deadline by Monday at 5 o'clock in the afternoon to get $50 and make an appeal to the community house project and stop the project temporarily anyway. And it's a waste of hundreds of thousands of dollars of your tax money, and it's bound to end up in lawsuits. Even if it was to go through, it's going to end up with lawsuits of people that live there who are going to have health problems. I was coughing there the entire time I was there, and as soon as I left there, the coughing stopped within a couple of days. And so that tells me there's something drastically wrong in that area with the environment surrounding that area. And so I'm following through with this. I have to be true to my conscience, because all these things are valid reasons for not going through with the community house. Plus, there is a problem of most observers that have watched what has happened with the Citizens Committee for the Homeless know that they have to have some doubts as to their ability to manage a homeless situation and treat the people humanely. We had several items there that I don't want to go into right now, but there's several inhumane treatments that happened at the Coral Street Shelter because of mismanagement and incompetence.
Well, Dan, this is kind of a bombshell. I mean, even I, who had toyed with the idea of appealing this, didn't really commit myself to doing it. Are you simply are you picking up on arguments that I've made, do you think? Are you, I'm sure that someone will accuse you of being my pawn in this matter.
They've done that before.
I actually suggested to you, but I don't think that, I tell you again, this appeal will not win. I think we know that for sure. I'm pretty sure that the city council will give you a 7-0 thumbs down when it comes up in the last Tuesday in February, which I guess is when the appeal will be heard, if you file this appeal, which has to be filed by Monday, I understand, at 5 o'clock. And it costs $50 to file now. I mean, couldn't that $50 be better spent?
Actually, I don't think so, because we need to let the public know the truth of what's going on. And we've tried that several times continuously in the last 2-3 months, is to let the public know, but somehow between what's actually happening and the time it gets in the newspapers and television and everything, a whole lot of stuff is left out. And I feel that this is the only way that we can bring our problems to the community. And one of the things about this $50 is, you know, all this problem in the first place is because of discrimination. Discrimination against the homeless, against the poor. And also, the thing that I observed is that all of us have been reaching out to the city council and the county supervisors who do not understand being victims of discrimination and homelessness and things like that. And that who I want to reach out to now is people who really do understand discrimination. For instance, like, let's say, the Latino community, if you can help us, we'd sure appreciate it. The Afro-American community, the Jewish community, whatever, gay and lesbian community, NAACP, anybody that can help us in our effort towards our goals here to eliminate discrimination against the poor and the homeless is sure appreciated. I need to reach out to you people because you are the people who really do understand discrimination and will do something about it. And if you can help us financially, that's fine. If you can help us in other ways, it's sure appreciated.
Well, I'm all for that, Dan. And how can people contact you? What phone number do you want to give them to if they want to support either your appeal or perhaps your broader program against discrimination with the homeless?
Well, I have a pager number, and I have a pager only 24 hours a day, and that telephone number is 932-7206. And
say that again, Dan.
Okay. My pager number is 932-7206, and when you finish dialing the number, be sure and hit the pound sign, and I will call you as soon as possible once I get the call.
Give that number another ring a day on the phone here.
If anybody can help us with the $50 by Monday at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, the pager number is 932-7206.
Now, after that time, are you going to want there any continued help of any sort?
That's only a temporary answer to a problem, but I'd like to have all of these different organizations that I just listed to either call my pager number, or there's also, Robert is an activist, and
you can leave a message for Dan on my machine, 423-4833 or 423-HUP, if that's what you're asking.
Right, I was going to ask that. I didn't want to give it out unless you said so. And then the other problem is that the sleeping band is, if it wasn't for the sleeping band, we probably wouldn't even be sitting here right now talking about this. But the trouble is the sleeping band makes it impossible for homeless people not to be criminals after 11 p.m. and suffer a fine. And then what it really amounts to is you're going to do jail time or you're going to be a fugitive. You know, if you don't go to the court because you don't have the money, which is probably what most of them do, then you become a fugitive, and then one thing leads to another, and it's probably going to end up in jail time or...
Do you have any reports of recent camping tickets, Dan? I mean, some council members would tell you, Scott Kennedy, I would imagine, among them, that Santa Cruz police do not pursue this as a priority, that it only happens if there's a real serious problem and a complaint.
Well, I've talked to several people, I don't have the exact examples, but in general, I've talked to several people who have gotten tickets on camping, and they say that some law enforcement agencies aggressively look for homeless people, maybe out in the woods, or...
Which agencies are those?
On horseback. I think one of them is the rangers from the state parks, is that?
No, city rec, park and rec.
Okay.
That's park and the rangers,
yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
The Pocono you're talking about.
Yeah, someone's told me that they come on horseback, and you probably end up losing all your things, you know, your tent or whatever your belongings are and things, and then you get a ticket, and I think in some cases you even go to jail.
Well, so you intend, let's go back to this more kind of bombshell you're dropping, you intend to appeal the permit granted by the Zoning Board and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless to blacktop the open-air shelter area and put in 10 trailers for its community house project.
Yeah, and I'm doing that independently, by the way. This is a total act of conscience, and I'm not representing the River Street refugees, even though I am a River Street refugee. I'm not representing Save Our Shelters Committee. I'm representing Dan Hopkins, because this is what I think I have to do. For months, I've known that I was going to come to this point where I was going to have to do this.
What do the River Street refugees, who I guess now have moved to New Brighton Beach again?
We just moved there yesterday, and this constant moving around, we can't get our lives together, and this is one of the problems about homelessness, is when you get in a situation like this, the system has a tendency to push you down farther and farther. People who are rich, people who are in city councils or county supervisors, make laws to make you go down farther and farther, instead of empowering you and trying to do some constructive act to help. And it's the same thing in the minority community.
What did the River Street refugees, the other River Street refugees, say about your plan to appeal this?
Well, I talked to them this morning about it, and some are neutral, but others say that I'm actually going to harm the River Street refugees. And I personally don't see it that way, and the reason that was brought up why I would be harming them is because they were going to get mad at the River Street refugees because I appealed this, and I just really don't see that. They all along through this whole thing, they have trusted the good faith of the City Council and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And in every instance, so far, they have not compromised or given in any way to try to empower us in any way. And they just, you know, and then on March 15th, not only are the River Street refugees going to be with no place to go, but also all of the people at the Army, and I think the ISSP program might be staying open, but I'm not sure.
It stays open until April 30th when it goes into an extremely limited form.
So that means that there are going to be about 150 people out on the streets, no place to go, and after 11 p.m. they will be criminals if they go to sleep. And to me, you know, that's the highest form of discrimination and injustice that you can put on any human being, that they can't even sleep.
Well, I probably, everyone agrees with you, the River Street Refugees, Save Our Shelter, Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and even up to half the city council, because I think Scott Kennedy has said at different times that he opposes the sleeping ban, though he's never brought anything up that would significantly challenge it. Nonetheless, that has been his claim. And I think Catherine Byers and Celia Scott probably opposed the sleeping ban, so that's 3 out of 7. But what good is it going to do, Dan, for you to raise an issue publicly about the integrity, about the competence, about the usefulness, the worthiness of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, when this is a primary group that, let's say, the River Street Refugees are trying to work with in order to get the city council perhaps to go to the county board of supervisors to get a piece of property for a campground?
Well, in my opinion, the city council, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and possibly the county supervisors all seem to have the same mind